Well, on a day hot enough to make the devil cuss, I walked into a bar so thirsty I was spitting dust. Barkeep asked me, what'll it be? I said, what you got? He said, well, let's see. We got Lone Star, PBR, Rolling Rock, Shiner Bock, Moose Drew, Low Duels, Heffenbison, Ziegenbach, Keystone, Coors Light, Coors, we got Red Stripe, Amstel, Amsterdam, and the Tall Can, Michelob, Miller Lite, Guinness by the pint glass, Doppelbock, Lager, take his waller, cause it's going fast, oatmeal, stout, and a lot of line and Kugels, open up your wallet, no time to be frugal, there's 99 bottles of beer on the wall, 99 bottles of beer, take one down and pass it around, 98 bottles of beer on the wall.
All right, ticket heads, Cable Smith here with you this morning, and a happy Saturday morning to you. That is Zane Williams, 99 bottles of beer on the wall, getting things started for us on the initial South Texas broadcast of the Lone Star Outdoor Show. The Lone Star Outdoor Show has been on the air in Dallas for about 5 months, and I am thrilled to have added the little ticket to the mix so we can start reaching the South Texas outdoorsman or woman. I promise you that this show is unlike any other. It'll be entertaining and educational as each week we visit with the big names from the outdoor industry, from Ted Nugent to Jim Shockey, and this week's guest, fishing legend Bill Dance. You'll hear from state senators such as San Antonio's own Jeff Wentworth, who continually stands up for our Second Amendment rights. And if there's one thing I love as much as hunting and fishing, it's the wide world of sports, and you'll hear from famous athletes who also have a passion for the outdoors, such as current Dallas Cowboy defensive end Marcus Spears, to former Cowboy quarterback and Hall of Famer Roger Staubach. Also, I hope you like good old Texas country music, because we'll visit with our great state's most endearing artists who also share a passion for the outdoors. And I ain't talking about any of that Nashville Kenny Chesney crap either. I mean Roger Kreger, Kevin Fowler, Charlie Robinson, Max Stalling, Jason Boland, and many others. The good folks over at Texas Parks and Wildlife also contribute a lot to this show, from game wardens to program directors. You'll hear from them on about a bi-weekly basis as well. We'll also have fresh and saltwater fishing reports from time to time. And last but not least, you'll also hear from average Joes like you and me who have had spectacular or unusual occurrences in the outdoors. Good or bad, it's those stories that really draw me in the most because I can relate to them. I mean, it's stuff that could happen to any one of us while we're in the outdoors. Couple other things that you need to know. If you ever miss a show or a specific segment, you can always find what you're looking for at my website, which happens to be TexasOutdoorsMedia.com. That's TexasOutdoorsMedia.com. Every show is saved in its entirety right there on the homepage. There's also a ton of other great information for the outdoorsman or woman, including our Photo of the Month contest. Of course, there's a weekly preview that'll let you know who's going to be on that week's show, and so much more. So be sure to check out the website from time to time. Well, we've got to take a quick break. When we come back, we'll visit with the legend himself, Bill Dance, only on the Lone Star Outdoor Show. Barefoot Fishing Tours and guide Charles Whited is South Texas' premier largemouth guide service. Charles not only puts you on fish, but he also teaches adults and kiddos the techniques and strategies needed to land big bass. With two Bass Champs Angler of the Year awards and a record 44.98-pound five-fish stringer on Choke Canyon, his achievements speak for themselves. Fishing Choke Canyon, Bastrop, Browning, and Canyon Lake, call Charles at 512-557-6772. That's 512-557-6772, or visit barefootfishingtours.com.
Kenneth Henneke's Fish Hatchery has been serving Texas for over 30 years, and we carry every fish you need to stock your ponds, lakes, creeks, and rivers. From all types of bass, perch, tilapia, to shad and various catfish, we have what you need and are the only hatchery that offers the fast-growing F1 hybrid catfish. Centrally located in Hallettsville, we deliver anywhere in Texas. So give us a call at 361-798-5934. That's 361-798-5934. Or visit our website at www.hennekehatchery.com.
Located on 12,500 acres in South Texas's beautiful Sutton County, McPherson Forum Ranch is a one-of-a-kind operation. Owner and operator Sandy McPherson takes pride in running a family-owned and operated ranch that caters towards each hunter's needs. Trophy whitetails roam the ranch's beautiful hill country terrain, and Axis fallow and black buck hunts are also available. Outstanding lodging and accommodations are also a part of the experience at McPherson Forum Ranch. Call Sandy at 210-827-2915. That's 210-827-2915, or visit McPherson4MRanch.com today.
Lehman H Feeders has been making the highest quality feeder for 45 years, and it takes 45 years to get 45 years of experience. Manufactured in Texas, we offer feeders for deer, quail, fish, pets, and livestock, and even songbirds. Some of our feeders are still operating in the field after 40 years of use. Makers of the trusted Blind Buddy and Blind Buddy Jr., our feeders are the most durable and user-friendly on the market. Visit www.lehmanhfeeders.com, because life's too short to buy a cheap feeder. That's lehmanhfeeders.com.
Life is a gamble, a game we all play. But you need to save something for a rainy day. You've got to learn to play your cards right if you expect to win in life. Don't put it all.
Good morning, Texas. The greatness of George Strait bringing us back from break here on the Lone Star Outdoor Show. Often imitated, never duplicated. Cable Smith here riding shotgun with you this morning. And before I introduce our first guest, I need to tell you about a fishing trip that we're giving away. Compliments of Captain Mike Caserta and Real Fiddler Fishing Charters. It's a bay fishing trip out of Port Aransas. It's a trip for two with Captain Mike. Also, the official outdoor apparel of the Lone Star Outdoor Show, Game Guard, will be outfitting the winning angler and his fishing buddy with their vented microfiber fishing shirts. The total value of this package is over $550. So, how do you win? Well, let me tell you. Saturday, June 26th, the first caller to call in after the Real Fiddler Fishing Charter commercial plays will win the trip, and I will give that phone number away next week and, of course, the week of the contest. So be tuning in as you can win the fishing trip for two with Real Fiddler Fishing Charters. You want to catch bull reds and big specs? Captain Mike is the man for the job. And now, without further ado, it is my distinct pleasure to introduce one of the outdoor industry's true living legends. He's been hosting fishing shows for over 40 years and currently has shows that air both on Versus and the Outdoor Channel. Mr. Bill Dance, how are you doing this morning?
It's going great. I got a guy in here from London.
Oh, yeah.
Doing some interviews for the BBC, and I've been trying to understand him. And been doing interviews with him.
Yeah, hopefully we're going to get the best of England this afternoon in the World Cup. You probably don't follow the World Cup, though, huh?
I tell you what, he asked me a question. I said, "What'd you say?" I said, "You don't talk like you're from Tupelo, Mississippi." He says, "Oh, no." How you doing?
Bill, I can't complain.
Where are you from?
Dallas, Texas.
Oh, okay. You're old Southern boy.
Yes, sir. Just like yourself. We got a lot to get into this morning, Bill, so let's go ahead and jump right into it.
Okay, buddy.
And just a little disclaimer, I did not come up with all these questions. I put out a feeler for our Texas anglers. I told them the great Bill Dance was going to be on the show, and they came up with these questions that they wanted me to ask you. So here we go. Let's start off with something funny. What is the best prank that you ever played while fishing a tournament?
Hey, well, we pulled so many. I'll tell you right now that I look back in the early days of, I remember one morning I got down to the boat dock kind of early, and I had to change out some line, and I don't know, I was dog tired the night before, the afternoon before, and I didn't do it, and I got there a little bit early. My boat was parked next to Roland Martin's, and Roland at that time was running a Johnson outboards. Uh-huh. And another good friend of ours was running Evinrude's, and both of them OMC engines. And I think at that time we were all running 100. I think the horsepower limitations back then, Ray Scott would only let us run up to about 150 horse engines. Mm-hmm. So I got there, and what I did, I just jumped over real quick in Roland's boat and took his 150 Callan off, and jumped over in Doug Odom's boat. And Doug was from North Carolina. And I took his Callan off, and I put it on Roland's boat, and I put Roland's motor, Callan, on Doug's Evinrude motor. And both of them goofy as dumb in a box of rocks. You know, they come bouncing down there that morning, you know, and they're thinking about where they're going, you know, and they're talking up there, carrying on a conversation. And neither one of them noticed it. Neither one of them noticed it. Everybody else, you know, had known, you know, told several people, and they knew what was going on. As we idled down to for boat inspection that morning, we were idling down through there, and the boats were all lined up. You know, we had our navigation lights on. It was like 15, 20 minutes before daylight. Somebody said, Roland, when did you start running Evinrude? And he said, hey, Johnson's my sponsor. Don't ever say that. And he says, oh, well, you got the wrong boat this morning then, didn't you? And he said, what? He spun around and he looked at that motor cow, and he looked back, and he looked like a cow looking at a new gate. He did about three double takes, and somebody said something to Doug about the same time, and they were about two boats apart. And both of them looked at each other, and both of them hollered, we're going to kill you, Dance. We're going to kill you. And they were jumping through boats, looked like raccoons hopping through boats, crickets jumping, changing Callens out. But, oh, that was, we used to do silly things like that and, back in those early days. And, I could just go on and on and on. Roland put a snake in my bed one time. And
are you scared of snakes?
I'm not scared of snakes. I just, you know, if I see them, I'm not scared of them. But if they surprise me, I don't like a surprise, you know.
Right.
I know some people are just, oh, there's a snake. Look way out there on the middle of the lake. Let's go the other way. You know, I'll carry on. And 90%, everything's a cottonmouth, you know.
Uh-huh.
Every water snake is a cottonmouth. Oh, look at that cottonmouth. Look at that water moccasin, you know. But 80% of what you see on the lakes are water snakes anyway. They're harmless. But I'm not scared of snakes, but I don't like to crawl in bed and feel something crawling over my legs.
Yeah.
Not knowing what it is.
Well, sounds like Roland got you back then.
Yeah. I mean, we've done put turtles in the shower and put birds, anhingas in the commode. And, well, we've done everything, crazy things, mistreated wildlife that we shouldn't have done. But we didn't hurt it. I mean, really, always turned it loose. But we did silly things back in those days. Part of the fun.
Well, I wouldn't worry about it. No friends of PETA or the Humane Society on this show.
Oh.
All right. A serious question for the crappie anglers. If you find crappie suspended in open water, not relating to structure, are those crappie typically inactive?
Well, most fish that are suspended can be very inactive. And more times than not, they are, but they can be caught. Crappie spend probably the majority of their lives suspended. If you think about it, even when they're shallow, they're suspended. They inflate their swim bladder, and they maintain neutral buoyancy. Even when they're out over open water, you know, 15, 20 feet deep, over 40 feet of water, they can be caught. They go through inactive periods during those times, but trollers catch them. A lot of fishermen, vertical fishing, can catch those fish. But more times than not, if they're relating close to some key structural feature, the times that they'll move into a ledge, that's the time to really get them. Or if there's some type of cover near those suspended fish, when they move to that cover, they're a lot easier to catch. But I used to go down to our wide floodplain reservoirs in North Mississippi, and I'd find suspended crappie out over the river channel, the Tallahatchie River, it impounds Sardis Reservoir. And Enid Reservoir, where the world record white crappie came from years ago, it weighed 5 pounds and 2 ounces.
Wow.
Fred Bright out of Memphis caught that fish. That's a white crappie now.
Huh.
And I would run the river channel, and I'd find the fish suspended. And then the first thing I would do, wherever I found them suspended, they would normally suspend at the same depth that the ledge was. In other words, if the river ledge was 15 feet, more times than not, they'd be suspended out at about 15 feet. And I could run further on up the lake, up toward the upper reaches of the lake, where the river bank might be 5 feet deep. And if the fish were suspended, they'd be sitting out there in 5 feet. And then I could go to the lower end of the lake where I'd have 40 feet of water along the channel, and they'd be out there around 20 feet off the ledge. But those fish were tougher to catch more times than not, but they could be caught. They were a tougher bite. But when they would move to the ledge, they were real easy to catch when they would come in to feed on the ledge. And when I'd find them out there suspended, I'd mark those fish, and I'd periodically check the ledge, you know, throughout the day. And many times I would find those fish, they'd move to the ledge. And when I'd find them on the ledge, when they'd leave the ledge, more times than not, I could idle out and I could ease out. And sure enough, there they'd be suspended right out over that open water. And at certain times of the day, they'd move back to the ledge, and then I could bang them. If they generated water, which they did not do on those wide floodplain reservoirs, but on lakes like the TVA lakes, when I found them like that, when they'd pull water for hydroelectric purposes, those fish would, boop, they'd go right to the ledge, just like the bass do. If the ledge had cover, it would make it that much more appealing.
So find the fish, find the ledge, and then bang them when they're going to feed. Gotcha. Bill, a lot of anglers want me to ask you if you ever regretted giving up competitive tournament fishing as early as you did. I mean, you've got 3 BASS Angler of the Year titles, and did you ever regret not going for more?
No, I really don't. I wouldn't be doing what I'm doing today had it not been for the tournaments. Tournaments opened a lot of doors for me, as well as it did, you know, for Jimmy Houston and Roland and Hank Parker, and a lot of us wouldn't be doing what we're doing today had it not been for those tournaments. I don't miss the tournaments. I wouldn't take anything in the world for the 15 years that I competed in tournaments, and I'll tell you why. Tournaments afforded me the opportunity to fish many different types of lakes throughout the country, from lowland to midland to highland-type reservoirs to canyon-type reservoirs out west to river lakes, taught me how to fish summer, fall, winter, spring, cold water, hot water, muddy water, clear water. It gave me an opportunity to meet and fish with so many different fishermen from around the country. The fishermen from California, learned techniques from them, from the Carolinas, from Florida, from Minnesota. Learned techniques from people like Al Linder. You know, just noted fishermen that did well back in those early days, good fishermen, learning their techniques. And then a lot of the trial and error things of comparing a northern fisherman's techniques with a west coast fisherman's techniques, maybe a little bit of what an east coast fisherman, and even a southern fisherman's techniques. And it helped me tremendously to become a much more versatile fisherman.
Right.
I don't miss the tournaments. I miss the people, but doing the work that I do, I work with a lot of the guys. Jimmy and I do a lot of stuff together. Roland and I do a lot of stuff. Hank and I do a lot of things together. A lot of the TV guys, we're together a lot, and we talk a lot. In fact, I talked to Houston night before last. We talked about 45 minutes. We're trying to come up with some ideas and things that we can do to help the charter boat captains along the Gulf Coast. Mm-hmm. And around this oil spill things, these guys that have been so good to us over the years, we're trying to come up with some ways and some ideas that we can maybe do some fundraising things to help them. So a lot of these guys, we still communicate. And then in my travels, I still see a lot of the old guys that I used to compete with, and I still talk to them periodically. And but as far as me competing in the tournaments, no, I don't miss that. But I wouldn't take anything in the world for what I learned from it. I compete every day when I go fishing, whether it's fun fishing or whether it's fishing with a rider, fishing with a buyer, fishing with a sponsor, or fishing to do a show. I'm still competing one-on-one with that fish, trying to match wits with him, using a lot of those techniques that I learned from the early days. And you don't forget those things. The tournaments were a good thing for Bill Dance and a good thing for a lot of these other guys. But my fun is more one-on-one directly against the fish instead of one-on-one against the fish and one-on-one against 100 other competitors. So I'd rather do what I'm doing today, and I'm very content with that.
Well, Bill, we've got to take a quick break, but when we come back, let's find out who you think are the best fishermen out there today. Among other things, when we come back, it's more with the legendary Bill Dance, only on the Lone Star Outdoors Show.
Well, my buddy said he'd rather fish in a lake. It doesn't compare to these saltwater bays. I got a little embarrassed when he brought out the cooler, so I brought out my box of my chartreuse lures. Because the weather's nice and the water's bright, man, I could fish here all damn night when you had a bad day.
Hey, Hey, ticket heads. Wes Mundy here, owner and operator of Double Diamond Outfitters, Texas premier outfitting service. I'm currently booking South Texas Trophy Whitetail Hunt, as well as exotic hunts for axis and fallow deer, red stag, and many others. Check out my website at www.huntdoublediamond.com to find out about my West Texas Trophy Audad and Pronghorn Antelope Hunt. Fall whitetail hunts are going fast, so call me, Wes, at 210-602-3118 or visit huntdoublediamond.com and let me take you on the hunt of a lifetime.
Hey outdoorsmen, it's that time of year again. The wind is changing and the temps are rising, so let's put away the camo and guns and get the tackle box ready. We all know that you're familiar with Game Guard, the official camo of the Lone Star State. Well, they're at it again, and now they're making a real difference in the fishing apparel industry. Game Guard is bringing that same commitment to quality and technical apparel to those guys and gals on the water. Game Guard's vent back shirts are offered in 7 great colors and perform like no others. Game Guard is Texas-based, family-owned, and committed to their loyal customers. Fishermen have many choices when it comes to outdoor apparel, and Game Guard is dedicated to earning your business. So be sure to ask for Game Guard at your local hunting or fishing retailer, or go to www.gameguard.net. Game Guard, the official outdoor apparel of the Lone Star Outdoor Show.
Texas Pack and Paddle is a premier outdoor adventure outfitter in South Texas. In addition to guided and group trips, we also carry a huge selection of kayaks for rental and purchase. Need some pointers? Come check out one of our kayak demos. We carry clothing and accessories to fit all your travel needs. We'll also fix you up with the perfect backpack. Conveniently located at the Arbor Park Shopping Center in San Antonio, we carry everything you'll need for that fly fishing trip. Check us out at www.txpaddlesports.com. That's txpaddlesports.com.
Summer's in full swing, and that means dove season is right around the corner, and the beautiful Record Buck Ranch is your ticket to an awesome day of wing shooting. With over 23,000 acres stretching from Hondo to Uvalde, we book both central and south zone dove hunts. Day hunts are only $80 per hunter, while the exclusive two-day lodge package is a steal at $825. Call Jim at 830-279-8733 or Heath at 830-262-1802 or visit www.recordbuckranch.com. At $80 apiece, the day hunts are going fast, so give us a call and book your Texas dove hunt today. Listen up, saltwater anglers, because you need to check out Real Fiddler Fishing Charters with my friend, Captain Mike Caserta. Captain Mike has been fishing Rockport to the Laguna Madre since 1979 and will cater to the type of fishing you want to do. Catch big reds and trout on artificial or live bait. You can also wade fish or fish out of Captain Mike's comfy bay boat. For a relaxing day on the water that you won't soon forget, call Captain Mike at 361-790-6374 or visit www.realfiddle.com to check out the awesome weekday specials. That's www.realfiddle.com.
Hey, Captain Keith from The Wizard and Deadliest Catch. You're listening to the Lone Star Outdoor Show.
I was 18, my brother was 21. One Saturday evening, when all the work was done, we went down to the river, had some tried lines to run.
Chris Knight bringing us back from break there. I'm your host, Cable Smith, and we've still got the legendary Bill Dance on the line. Quick reminder that coming up at the bottom half of the hour, we'll be joined by the amazing emu, Jim Kern, former Major League pitcher, three-time All-Star. After baseball, Jim became a professional hunting and fishing guide, so we'll visit with him coming up here shortly. But right now, let's go ahead and pick it back up with the legendary Bill Dance. Of course, Bill Dance Outdoors airs 5 times a week on Versus, and Bill Dance Saltwater airs 4 times a week on the Outdoor Channel. Bill, what I want to know is, other than yourself, who do you consider to be the best bass fisherman out there?
I don't consider myself. I think there's a lot of great fishermen.
But you got to choose one.
No. Well, there's a lot of great fishermen. Yeah. Best fisherman I ever met, when I look back over the years, you've probably never heard of them, but one of them is Northwest Arkansas, Southern Missouri, is a guy by the name of Glenn Andrews. The next one was a fisherman from Texas named Floyd Mabry. He worked for Bomber Lure Company. And the third one was Buck Perry. Now, those were three tremendous fishermen. I'll come back now to today's fishermen. I look at a guy by the name of Larry Nixon. I look at a guy by the name of Roland Martin. And let me say why I'm naming these two guys right now. Their ability to fish a foot of water or 81 feet of water. There's a lot of fishermen that can fish a reservoir, but there's not a lot of fishermen that can fish a reservoir and moving water. There's a lot of fishermen that can fish shallow water real well, but they can't fish real deep water. Roland Martin can fish moving water. He can fish shallow water. He can fish real deep water. Larry Nixon can fish shallow water, and he can fish deep water, and he's good at it. He's very consistent at it. They're very good at it. I'll tell you two guys today that are very consistent at what they do. One is Skeet Reese, and the other, and I'll throw another one back there that I didn't throw in. He's more shallow oriented, is Ricky Klun. I'll look today at Skeet Reese and Kevin. Those two guys have got a hot stick right now. So if I could take and make, if I had a team, if I could put a team together.
Like a fantasy fishing team. A
fantasy fishing team. Of course, Buck is gone. He's fishing somewhere up above right now. But if I could just go back and I could put this fantasy fishing team together, I'd put Glenn Andrews, Floyd Mabry, Buck Perry, Roland Martin, Larry Nixon, Ricky Klun, Skeet Reese, and Kevin Van Dam. And I'm going to tell you, I'd have me a fishing team. Now, there's still a bunch of other good ones out there. And believe me, a lot of them are good ones.
That would be a heck of a fishing team. And, of course, Skeet's leading the Angler of the Year standings right now. And, obviously, Kevin won the Classic this year at Alabama's Lay Lake.
Is that who won it?
Yeah.
No, I'm kidding. I had dinner with him the night before. Jimmy and Kevin and Hank and I had dinner that night before with the Kodak people. And Kevin, you could crack a walnut between his kneecaps. He's still nervous as he could be. I said, what are you going to do tomorrow? He said, I've just beat my fish to death. I just don't know what to do. I said, I know what you're going to do. What do you think I'm going to do? I said, you're going right back to the only place you got. And he said, you got it. That's all I got. And he did, and he did better, I think, that last day than he did the second day.
He sure did. Nudged out Jeff Crete for his third Bassmaster Classic title. Moving right along, this one is for the bass anglers this morning. Bill, if you could only have one bait in your tackle box, what would it be and why?
If I was on Survivor, and you said you can only have one bait, one size, one color, one blade type, and one finish, what would it be? I'm going to tell you what the bait would be, and then I'll break it down for you, okay?
Okay.
And I'll tell you why. All right, go in Bass Pro and get what you want. I'd walk right to the spinnerbait department. I'm not saying the spinnerbait's my favorite bait. It's one of my favorites, but I'm talking about one bait. I'm on Survivor. I've got to survive. I'd take me a black 3/8 ounce Booyah spinnerbait with a number 5 silver Colorado blade. Now, why would you take that? Okay. Why would you take 3/8? Okay. I can only have one bait. Quarter's a good size. 1/2 ounce is a good size. 3/4, 1 ounce, they all have their place. But the 3/8 is probably the most universal. I can only have one bait now, one size. I'm going to take the 3/8. I can take the 3/8, and I can fish it in 20 feet of water if I need to. I can throw it in the wind pretty good. I can control it much better than I can the quarter. It's not as heavy as the half. I can do a little bit more with the 3/8 than I can with the quarter. It's more universal. I'm going to go with the 3/8 of this one size. Now, why am I going to take black? All right, is black a color? Well, yes and no, but it's a shade. It will hold its identity in low-light conditions better than any other shade or color. You can look at night, early in the morning, late in the afternoon, on cloudy days, in a muddy environment, off-colored environment. It will hold its identity better than any other shade. Now, people might say, nah, I'll take a chartreuse, or I'll take... Well, we're not talking about them. We're talking about what Bill Dance has one bait. I'm talking about what I have confidence in, okay? Now, if you had a black stob underwater in a muddy environment, and you got a chartreuse one over here about a foot from it, and you got a white one of some other light color, which one are you going to be able to see the best?
Always bet on black.
Sure. What is going to silhouette at night against that sky better than any other color or shade?
The one you can see the best.
That's black.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. Now, I don't know what I'm going to run into on Survivor. I don't know if I'm going to be in a muddy situation, if I'm going to have to survive at night, early in the morning, late in the afternoon. I am taking black because black is going to hold its identity better than any other shade. There's no question it's going to. Now, why am I going to take a silver blade? Silver is going to reflect better than any other finish. The silver flash is going to reflect more than brass, more than gold, more than the rainbow colors. It's going to reflect more. Now, why am I going to take a Colorado blade? A Colorado blade, we take the three most popular blades, the Willow blade, which has got, it spins faster. It spins faster, it reflects good, but you got to reel it much faster to get it to spin. The Indiana, which is a compromise blade between the Willow and the Colorado, it's kind of a compromise blade. It vibrates, it flashes, but nothing like the Colorado. The Colorado blade, you can slow it down. It catches more water. It has more water resistance. It thumps more. It vibrates more. You can gurgle it. You can fish it slow. You can free fall it. You can do so much more with a Colorado blade, especially in a slow, slow presentation when that's needed. You can gurgle it. Like I say, you can slow roll it. You can bottom bounce it, free fall it. So, of all that, I have caught fish under the worst conditions you could possibly imagine. I looked at a pond, or look at a situation, and I said, look at that water. It looks like a Yahoo soda.
Ugh.
And I did a show several years ago, and I said, I want to try to prove a point to see. And I don't know if I can prove it to myself, but I think I can. It was in West Tennessee, and it was a cattle pond.
Mm.
It was so muddy, you could track a raccoon across it or cut it with a knife. It was so muddy. And I took that bait I just told you about, mm-hmm. that black 3/8 ounce Bouillot spinnerbait, and we shot a show on it. The water was 43 degrees. And I sat in one spot, and I would make repeated casts, creating a sound path, you know, creating a path. I'd throw and throw and throw and throw. And sometimes I'd make 5 or 6 casts and coming right through the same area. It was shallow. It's shallow. I mean, I had to fish it shallow, you know. And I stayed up in the shallow end and or right along the shallow banks, and I would make repeated casts. And I fished from the bank, and I caught a whopping string of bass. And they looked like a bed sheet. They was white as Casper. The fact is, I caught them on that bait. Even when I was a little boy growing up, my go-to color was black. And I fish these little farm ponds with a black Sonic. It's always been a great color. We all know that a black worm is a great bait. A jig and a plastic combination is a great color combination. We know that that's a high percentage bait is a black worm or a black jig with and these creature baits, black's a great color. But we don't fish black crankbaits for some odd reason. We don't fish a lot of black spinnerbaits for some odd reason. Something else we don't fish. You know, we fish white spinnerbaits a lot. We fish a lot of white crankbaits, but we don't fish a lot of white worms, and we don't fish a lot of white jig with plastic combinations. Some guys are starting to a little bit, but we have just misconceptions about colors. I don't know why. A black spinnerbait and a black crankbait, I remember years ago, Bomber, when they were down in Gainesville, Texas, they used to make a black, the old Bomber baits. I can't tell you the bass I used to catch on a black Bomber bait. Black is a good shade, but you asked me a question about 3.5 hours ago about what bait I take, and that's the bait, and that's the color, that's the size. You know, I put more importance in, you know, in that color of that skirt, because that's what I want them to see, because, you know, of all the senses that a bass possesses, you know, he can hear a bait, he can smell it if you put an attractant on it, but the final decision is made. He's got to see it to eat it. You know, it's like you can hear a steak cooking, you can smell it cooking, but you got to see it to eat it.
Mm-hmm.
So repeated cast and colors that contrast like the black, repeated cast to create the sound. He picks the sound up and he starts a search pattern, zeroing in, and you throw that bait back again, and he gets a little bit closer and a little bit closer, and you throw it back again, and now he's right toward the path, and here comes the bait through there, and he picks it up, and boom, and he detects it, not only the sound, he follows it, and then he sees that black object, boom, that's what you want him to see, and that's where the hook is.
Right, right.
But everybody has, you know, confidence is the greatest lure in your tackle box. If you've got confidence in certain things, now, one of your listeners might be saying right now, well, yeah, I don't agree to that. I say chartreuse is better. Well, that's fine. That's what that guy ought to fish if he's on Survivor. But if I'm on Survivor, I'm going to be throwing that black, I'm telling you, because that's what I got the most confidence in.
Once again, we're visiting with legendary fisherman Bill Dance here on the Lone Star Outdoors Show. Bill, let's go back quite a few years now. Who caught the first bass in BASS history?
Ray Scott says Bill Dance did.
Oh, the greatness of Ray Scott. He's actually been a guest on the show before.
Oh, yeah, old Ray's a mess. He's a good friend. If it wasn't for Ray, none of us would be doing what we're doing.
Mm-hmm.
No, it was on Beaver Lake in northwest Arkansas, and there were two boats. Ray Mursky of Dallas, a good friend of mine, he had a boat with a 60 on it or a 50 on it, and I had a road bed within, it was like just a three-long cast from the marina. They fired the gun, and back then we had everything from John boats, and Mursky and I did have two of the fastest boats in that 1967 tournament on Beaver. And they fired the gun. I was sitting way out on the left side, and I just made a U-turn and went across. And within 30 seconds, I was dropping the trolling motor. And as I was walking from the back of the boat, I was making a long cast to the roadbed. And by the time I got, before I could even get seated, boom, a bass hit it. And I hit a worm on that roadbed in about 6 feet of water, and I set the hook. It was a two-pound bass, and I turned and looked back to my right. And Troy Anderson was my partner from Little Rock, and he says, "Good gosh, look, I can see all the boats still running." He says, "That's the first bass of the bass tournament right there."
Wow.
He told Ray and became the first bass.
Bill, we're about out of time this morning, but I got to ask you, you know I'm a big Baylor Bears fan, so why are you always wearing that dadgum University of Texas hat all the time?
You have a darker orange than we got. Ours is a little bit brighter orange.
Just kidding. I know it was Coach Dickey that started sending you those volunteer hats.
Yeah, way back there, yeah. Coach Dickey, and then he left and went to Florida and then came back as the AD of Tennessee. And he sent me two of them and started wearing them, and they just became a trademark way back in the late 60s.
Bill, does a good old boy like yourself have an iPod?
Yes.
And what's getting the most play? What do you listen to on a regular basis?
Oh, I listen to a lot of OBG stuff, and I listen to a lot of country western stuff, and I listen to a lot of George Strait.
George Strait, that's good enough for me, buddy. And one more for you, Bill. What Texas lake would you most like to fish?
I would probably go to Falcon right now.
Mm-hmm.
I think it's hotter than a jug of red ants. Homestead is tough.
Oh, can't forget OHIV either. They were pulling sharelunkers out of there left and right this year.
Oh, really?
Yes, sir.
I don't know. Y'all have so many good lakes down there. I heard an awesome string came out of Fork last week. Y'all have some good lakes in Texas. You're mighty blessed. I think the Texas Parks and Wildlife do a phenomenal job for your fisheries down there.
Oh, yeah. They really do. Well, Bill, I can't tell you how much I appreciate it. It's not every day that the most recognized angler in the entire world stops by the little old Lone Star Outdoors Show. And from every angler and outdoorsman in the great state of Texas, I want to tell you thank you for all that you have done and continue to do to preserve, protect, and promote the sport that we love so much.
Cable, I appreciate it, and good luck with your show. And if anything I can do to help you, let me know.
You've already done more than enough, my friend.
Okay, buddy. Hey, you tell everybody I said hi.
We'll do it.
All right, look forward to hearing from you.
Bye-bye.
Bye-bye now.
Now that is a true American hero in my book. Coming up next, it's former Major League hurler Jim Kern. You're listening to the Lone Star Outdoor Show.
I guess it finally rained. It's down to 85. I bet the fish are biting down by the riverside.
A place to shoot is South Texas's premier shooting facility. We have a complete rifle range featuring five different distances out to 300 yards. A pistol range with gravity-fed targets, skeet, trap, crazy quail, and country doubles. We offer everything for the shooting sportsman. New and used firearms, reloading supplies, scopes, and ammo. If we don't have it, we'll get it within 2 days. Also offering CHL classes. Located just outside Loop 410 on Morrison Boulevard in South San Antonio, call 210-628-1888. A place to shoot, open 7 days a week. Call 210-628-1888.
From gun dog training to obedience and deer tracking programs, Rave Retrievers has it all. Boarding, training, and group and private lessons, morning or evening, we'll accommodate you and your dog. Owner Deborah Lee has 30 years experience in gun dog and obedience training and has recently added Amanda Burrell to the training staff to offer even more intensive training capabilities. With numerous ponds, creeks, boats, and duck blinds, we offer the most realistic training available. Go to www.raveretrievers.com for all your dog training and boarding needs. That's www.raveretrievers.com.
Listen up, ticket heads. When you harvest that Walworthy trophy, there's only one choice, Rustic Reminders Taxidermy. My friends Josh and Becky have over 19 years combined experience in taxidermy and reproduction mounts. Whether you take down a 200-class whitetail, an African rhino, or a trophy largemouth, Rustic Reminders does it all, producing top-quality mounts while maintaining focus on quick turnaround time. Located between San Antonio and New Braunfels, call Rustic Reminders at 210-317-7292 or visit www.gr8mounts.com. That's gr8mounts.com.
Lock Hill Feed Store is South Texas' premier feed store. We carry a variety of feeds, including extra clean deer corn that won't clog your feeders, as well as large and small deer pellets. Also featuring Country Acre Deer Block, Record Rack, Golden Deer Nuggets, and the best-selling berry-flavored ACCO Deer Block. Conveniently located in San Antonio. Pick up a 35-pound bag of Signs Diet Premium Dog Food for only $29.99. Call Lock Hill Feed Store at 210-691-2351. That's 210-691-2351. Or call toll-free at 877-738-5296.
Southern Deer Stands manufactures the only high-quality, lightweight, aluminum-insulated hunting blinds on the market, providing years of use without any maintenance. That's right, no more rotting, rusting, or repairing. Just hunting. Southern Deer Stands product lineup includes tower blinds with staircases, trailer blinds, and ground blinds on skids. We also have deer blind windows, doors, tower stands, and more. Whether you need one or 20 blinds, we'll deliver and set up right on your ranch or lease. Call Rob at 214-551-1530 or visit us at www.southerndeerstands.com.
I work the rigs from 3 to midnight on the Corpus Christi Bay.
Good morning, Texas. Cable Smith welcoming you back to the Lone Star Outdoor Show. And before I bring on our next guest this morning, I need to tell you about the first annual 2010 Southern Deer Stands Best Deer Blind Contest. We all know that Texas is king when it comes to the outdoors, especially deer hunting. Deer blinds and deer camps are a key part of that. So if you think you have the best deer blind in Texas, I want to see it. So send your best deer blind picture to CableWaco@yahoo.com. We've got three great prize packages. The grand prize winner receives a leather NRA jacket, a custom rifle work from Max Gunworks, $150 value, one-year subscription to Lone Star Outdoor News, a hat from Lone Star Outdoor News, a copy of the great book, Poachers, Crooks, and Other Turkeys from Lone Star Outdoor News. Game Guard's going to outfit the winners with a camo package. You'll also receive 20 bags of deer corn. Once again, it's the Southern Deer Stands 2010 Texas Deer Blind Contest. The winners will be announced on October 2nd right here on the Lone Star Outdoors Show. So go to www.deerblindcontest.com for more details. And now, without further ado, it is my pleasure to introduce former Major League All-Star and current owner and operator of Emu Outfitters, Jim the Amazing Emu Kern. Welcome to the Lone Star Outdoors Show.
Well, I thank you. It's a beautiful Saturday morning here.
Indeed it is. Jim, you had an amazing 13-year career in the Major Leagues, including three straight All-Star teams from 1977 to 79. The 79 team, you made it as a Texas Ranger. It was your best season. You went 13-5 with a 1.57 ERA and 29 saves. You recorded 136 strikeouts in 143 innings while only appearing in 71 games. That's an average of over two innings per outing for a closer. So my first question is, you know, you see guys like Mariano Rivera, they are rarely ever asked to record more than three outs. Jim, what changed? I mean, when did closers become so fragile?
I think a lot of it has to do with the philosophy of the game. When I grew up, we played baseball all day long, all the time, and you'd throw several hundred pitches. Suddenly, in the mid-70s, you started hearing this 100-pitch rule as starters. They didn't want them to go over 100 pitches because it would hurt their arm. I can remember in A-ball, I was extremely wild. I was so wild back then I got credit for a no-hitter when I didn't hit anybody. But I threw 235 pitches in a game, finished it, and that's just the way it was. Back then there was no such thing as this 100-pitch rule. You had people like Gaylord Perry, Ferguson Jenkins, Steve Carlton. Basically, the saying was there, if you didn't get him in the first seven innings, you weren't going to get him in the last two. They just shut things down. Then they started this philosophy of 100 pitches, and the pitchers were getting tired. They started putting this into effect with the young kids in Little League and in high school, Babe Ruth, Connie Mack. And I think what has really happened is they have limited these pitchers to around 100 pitches and taken them out of the game.
what it has done, you haven't built any arm strength when you were young. You're allowed to throw so many pitches and then no more. And I think that has really had its effect, plus the idea that managers right now are so aware of the press. The press will second-guess you for anything at this point. And so the managers have to make the moves the press would dictate as far as a left-handed pitcher against a left-handed hitter late in the game, pull them in and out, mainly because if they don't make the move and they lose, the press is absolutely going to fry them. Consequently, the managers make many more moves than they did back in our time. I was a right-handed power pitcher, and I actually had a lower the left-handed hitters had a lower batting average against me, a right-handed pitcher, than the right-handed hitters did. And that's mainly because I pitched on the inside half the plate, and the left-handers really don't care for that. And in our time frame, even as a short relief pitcher, I would come in the fourth inning, opening day 1979. Darl Alexander pitched 4 2/3 innings. I came in the fifth with two outs and pitched 4 1/3 innings to pick up the win. But that was my forte at that point, was being able to throw one hitter or five innings. And it had a lot to do with the way you grew up and the way you threw. And I think his 100-pitch rules had a very detrimental effect on ball clubs. Right now, the Rangers are carrying 13 pitchers on the staff, which gives them just three pinch hitters or extra people during the game. In my time frame, you carried 10 pitchers on the staff, sometimes nine, which gave you 15 players on the field that you could utilize instead of just 12.
And to kind of put things into perspective, in that same 1979 season, Phil Niekro threw 24 complete games. And that's probably more than the entire American League will combine for in 2010. They just don't make them like they did in your day, that's for sure.
No, you look at Ferguson Jenkins in 1975 with the Rangers. Fergie had 39 starts and 25 complete games. When a quality start is pitching five innings and giving up three runs, what's wrong with this picture? Mm-hmm. That's an ERA of what, five and a half? In my time frame, when your ERA got over 3.5, you quit looking at the stat sheet. You were embarrassed. I mean, it's the longer things go now, the better my lifetime ERA at 3.35 looks.
No doubt, man. And now to the nickname. Where did the amazing emu originate?
We were in a clubhouse in Cleveland. When I first came up, I was 6'5" and weighed about 180 pounds. I turned sideways, the only shadow on the ground was a pair of lips, you know. And I was walking through the clubhouse one day, and Pat Dobson and Fritz Peterson were sitting in the clubhouse in Cleveland doing a crossword puzzle. And the question was the world's largest non-flying bird. And I walked by all arms and legs. And from that time on, I became the amazing emu. And then I got traded that winter from Cleveland to Texas. So did Buddy Bell, and so did John Grubb. So the nickname came with us over here. I've been the amazing emu ever since. After 25 years, it's amazing. You'll walk through an airport, and somebody will say Jim, and you won't move. But somebody says emu, it's like, screech! Okay, which one of my derelict friends is this?
What are friends for? Well, Jim, let's shift gears and get into why I actually asked you to come on the show today. And that's because as much as you and I love baseball, we share an even stronger love for the great outdoors. And after you retired from pro ball, that love for hunting and fishing led to the creation of Emu Outfitters in 1987. So tell me, who is responsible for instilling that love for the great outdoors inside of you?
Oh, definitely my father. My mother tells me I was 3 years old, but my earliest memory from childhood was the old man putting me on his shoulders, and we lived in Michigan, and walking maybe half a mile out on these cement artificial breakwalls into Lake Michigan at a place called Ludington, and then tying me to the bulkhead on the pier with a rope, sitting there fishing for yellow perch all day, and then putting me back on his shoulders in the evening and carrying me back to camp. Anytime from the time I was 9 on and he went hunting or fishing, I was always asked if I wanted to go. And so consequently, it started very young, and I love places where no man's ever been. I've been a general manager of a fishing operation in Brazil's Amazon. I've spent the last 4 years as general manager of
Rainbow Bay Resort in Alaska, located 180 air miles from the nearest road. Spent 5 months up there last summer, and now I'm taking over an office to market peacock bass fishing in Brazil's Amazon again. It's these places like Alaska, Brazil, the Bitterroot Mountains of Idaho, where no man's ever been, are the places I love best in life.
It actually may surprise you to know that I have been to the Amazon rainforest of Brazil for a total of 6 weeks, four different trips, and have chased peacock bass, and in my opinion, there is no better freshwater trophy.
I'll tell you, I was down there in February and March of this year. February 9th, a gentleman named Bill Gassman from Des Moines, Iowa, caught a fish that'll be a new world record. IGA is just getting ready to certify it this month. Weighed 28 pounds, beat the old world record caught by Doc Lawson of Purcell, Oklahoma, by a full pound.
Wow.
That record has stood for 16 years. A lot of people did not think it would ever be broken. As you well know, when they hit, you very often wonder who's got a hold of who.
That is the truth, man. And honestly, I can't say there's a more beautiful place in the world than the Amazon rainforest.
Yes, it is. It is really something. I love going into the Indian villages that are very primitive. See freshwater dolphins, pink and gray dolphins that are indigenous only to the Amazon. You've got the outside chance of seeing a jaguar possibly swimming a river in the morning. Caimans and alligators and freshwater stingrays and more macaws. To me, it just feels like I'm going home. It's hard to explain, but it just feels like you're going home. You know, you were talking about 79 here with the Rangers. I think one of my biggest accomplishments that year was, after getting traded from Cleveland to Texas, is I was able to catch largemouth bass and stripers with Fergie Jenkins on Texoma, Tewakinee, Lake Arlington, and maybe a couple dozen stock tanks here. I was born and raised in Michigan, spent 3 years living in Cleveland, got traded here the winter of 78 and never moved away. To me, this is the greatest state in the world for fishing, hunting, and also the people are so neat here. I know a lot of people back east really get on nerve when you walk down the street and people you don't know say hi to you or wave at you. I mean, some of the people back east, it really unnerves them, but the people are so congenial here, and there's so many opportunities in Texas, and Parks and Wildlife really goes out of their way to enhance the opportunities for the sportsmen. It's a place I've never left.
Yeah, other places are nice to visit and all, but I ain't ever leaving Texas. Jim, you're pretty well versed as an outfitter. You mentioned South America, Alaska. You've made trips to Africa. What's been the most memorable experience during your 23 years as a professional fishing and hunting guide?
Well, it's, you know, when you try to compare one against the other, it's kind of like comparing one woman against the other. It just isn't going to work. Everything has its nuances. The interesting times you really like, in Cleveland one time, I got invited to this high-dollar duck club. You know, the big Cleveland Indians baseball player was a celebrity there. And I had a 10-gauge percussion muzzleloader I used to love to shoot, made about 1830 in England. And so I got out the duck blind. I mean, this was a beautiful duck blind. Had a walkway out to it over the marsh. There was a refrigerator in this thing, a telephone, a coffee maker, you know, built on a wood platform surrounded by dry reeds. And I get out there just for daylight, and I'm starting to load this muzzleloader, and everybody's laughing at me because I'm shooting a muzzleloader. And it was quite effective. And as I pour the powder down the barrel, I reach in my back pocket for one of the wads, and I left the wads in the truck. So I'm searching around. What have I got? I got some toilet paper. So stuff the toilet paper down and pour some shot in, some more toilet paper, and put percussion cap on, and just legal shooting time. The ducks come in, and they come right to the decoy spread and flare right over the blind. And I stand up, whoom, with this muzzleloader, and boy, mallard falls, and I'm big time happy getting out of the blind to get it because all these guys have been laughing at me. And we all walk out, look at the duck, and three of us, I think, and just get out to the duck, and I lean over to get it, and I look behind me, and there's a glow in the water reflection, and I'm thinking, this isn't right, and I look up in front of me, and the sun's raising in front of me, and I look behind me, there's a glow in the water, and I turn around, this toilet paper had been smoldering as it came out of the air, landed on this blind, set the dry reeds on fire. Here I am, this high-dollar duck club, this high-profile baseball player,
just set this duck blind on fire opening morning, and here we are. It burned all the way to the water. Refrigerator sitting in the water, telephone not ringing.
Wow.
And here we are sitting in the reeds with our duck call when they come to get us about an hour later. Little bit embarrassing.
Well, that might
Those are the part of hunting and fishing I love the best.
I mean, I don't know what to say, Jim. All right, where's your favorite place to hunt in the Great Lone Star State?
Oh, to be completely honest, as one of my good friends in Montana says, I don't care if it's stud field mice with a sharp stick. Let's go. I've spent a lot of time over the years out in the Breckenridge, Albany, Throckmorton area. Some great ranches out there in Shackelford, Stevens counties. Spent a whole lot of time on the Dawson Conway Ranch, 15,000 acres I leased for 9 years. Ran a whitetail operation. I've guided on the Cook Ranch right next to it for probably 15 years. But to be completely honest, I leased 82,000 acre ranch about 27 miles south of Marathon for 10 years for desert mule deer. That country is so forbidding down there. First time you look at it, you would swear a jackrabbit have to carry his lunch with him. But some of the most unbelievable desert mule deer hunting you've ever seen. We killed deer up to 195 Boone and Crockett down there. And that was always my favorite 2 weeks hunting in Texas. There's just something about that Big Bend area that just is unlike anything else. But I'll tell you, the mesquite, rolling mesquite pasture land of West Texas has its own enamor as well.
Is there an animal out there that you haven't harvested yet that you plan on hunting before your days are up?
Oh, I hunt in Alaska last fall. We have a brown bear season in the fall of odd-numbered years, and we had 14 hunters last year. We killed 11 brown bears, and when what you're hunting can come back and eat you if you mess up, just adds a whole new dimension to the guiding game. Personally, I've shot skeet and sporting clays competitively for 30 years, love to hunt and fish, don't care what the game is. I've done a lot more with a DSL camera than I have anything else in the last 10 years. To me, it's fascinating to take a picture. You can put the crosshairs on a deer 200 yards and knock him down with a 25-06. I've got to get within 30 to 40 yards to get a decent picture of that same animal. And you have to use all the skills you honed for years to get close enough with that camera. And I still hunt, don't get me wrong, but that camera I've fallen in love with the last 10, 15 years just because I call it kill and release.
And y'all can actually see some of Jim's photos at his photography site, and that is jimkernphotography.com. Be sure to check that out. When you do go hunting with the intent of harvesting game, do you prefer a bow or rifle?
I destroyed a shoulder probably 10 years ago in the Big Bend area. I fell back on my elbow and broke the upper left arm into about 30 pieces and lost about 40% of my range of motion. I'm no longer able to pull a bow. The bow hunting is interesting, again, very much like the camera game because of the close proximity the game necessitates. But I'm not able to shoot a bow anymore. That's one of the bigger things I miss at this point. I've reduced myself to my 54 caliber round ball muzzleloader for primitive arms. But when I do hunt, the shotgun's always been my first love of life. There's just something about shooting at things where they're going to be instead of where they're at.
What other famous athletes or former teammates have you spent a significant amount of time hunting with?
Oh, I think probably my best fishing and hunting buddy from baseball days was Ferguson Jenkins. Fergie was the absolute class of the game. And the first day I walked into the clubhouse in the parking lot, here's this pickup truck with Ontario plates on it and a bass boat behind it. And I walked in the clubhouse and said, whose bass boat is that? And Fergie says, oh, that's mine. I trailered it down from Canada. Fergie would take me fishing about every day. I mean, a new guy in town and you're just accepted. Fergie has hunted with me some of our celebrity hunts, some of our charity shoots. Fergie is just an outstanding outdoorsman and the absolute king
as far as personality. You want class. Ferguson Jenkins is class.
Well, Jim, from my experience with you, I'd have to say that you're a class act as well. I really appreciate the time this morning. Be sure to check out the website, emuoutfitting.com. Former Texas Ranger great and lifelong outdoorsman, Jim Kern, the amazing emu. I appreciate the time this morning, buddy.
You know, yeah, we'll have to go out and scare a poor defenseless animal one day.
Sign me up.
Sounds good.
There he goes. Texas's own, the amazing emu, Jim Kern. Well, we're about out of time. Hope everyone enjoyed the show this morning. Be sure to check out my website, texasoutdoorsmedia.com, to find out who will be on the show next week. I know Max Stalling will be here. I'm also trying to track down Houston Astro great Craig Biggio for all you Stros fans out there. We'll do it every Saturday right here from 7 to 8 a.m. on Sports Radio 760 AM The Ticket. Thanks to both of our guests this week, two legends in their own right, Bill Dance and Jim Kern. Thanks to all of our sponsors for making this show possible. Thanks to you, the listener, for being a part of the Lone Star Outdoors show. I'm Cable Smith saying y'all have a great week in the outdoors.